A man with a hole in his body was met with the option to sew it shut. He refused it, afraid that it was too deep, and closing it would hurt even greater than the wound itself. Robert Gene Cunningham Jr., born on July 18, 1943 in Richmond, Virginia, was a level-headed man. His mama said that he had so much of his father in him, whose voice was always as soft as a golden retriever, and whose temper would never rise above 70 degrees, even with his friends. But not a year later, and the Cunningham Sr. headed off to the war front at Normandy. Robert Jr., better known as Bobby, never knew his daddy well, and soon enough the word arrived that that would be the case for good. At the funeral, Bobby didn't even bat an eye, but to be fair, he was only a toddler then. After Bobby turned 6, he and his mom moved down to Hold County, to East Andrew Street in Laneford, after Mrs. Cunningham struggled with the finances. Their idyllic two-story home in the big city was just too much for her to keep up with, so they found themselves moving into the depths of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Bobby's start at Peters Barney Elementary School was easy enough, although his disposition led to a lack of true friends in his early life. The only people he made a connection with were Josiah Newby and Abigail Slater. Josiah was always bullied for his scrawny stature by his classmates, and Abby was scorned for missing an eye as part of a procedure to prevent the cancer she was born with. But as soon as Bobby made his place in the class with his deep interest in sports, he didn't take a stand in the situation. In fact, he seemed unfazed by it. Day in and day out, and he was simply there. The shell of apathy he wore only cracked slightly after he began to notice some changes in his mother. She began to leave the house more and more often, leaving Bobby with a babysitter for most weekends. He needed to stand up for himself more, to start being independent. But that independence bred a cooperation and care not seen by his other classmates. Bobby started to spend his time with Josiah and Abby, more time than his other, arguably closer friends. He asked about the two of them, realizing that they were both like him. Abby's mother passed away from the same eye cancer she was afflicted by, and Josiah's brothers were in hot water for their criminal lifestyles, a particular element Bobby knew from his own uncle, his mom's brother, who was a drug addict. As he continued to grow up, it started to become clear of where his mom was going during those weekends, even for a 12-year-old. Soon enough, she brought a stranger home, a man named Declan DeMars. He appeared nice and kind to his mother, but any time Bobby entered the room, any and all joy he had dropped dead. Declan would stare at the young boy as if he was an unwanted guest, which was what Bobby presumed was running through this man's head. Come middle school, and Declan put a brand new ring on Mrs. Cunningham's ring finger. Bobby appeared okay with this change, but a part of him whispered in spite. Not only would this man, essentially a stranger, be moving into his home, but this man would become his father. And again, Bobby seemed fine about it. But something was off about it. Something didn't feel right. Bobby asked Josiah about his own parents, who were happily married. It was confusing. Was that how parentage worked? Then where was Robert Sr.? Where was Dad? It was a December night, a month away from her second wedding, when Bobby sprung the ill-fated question onto his mother. She tried to embellish the stories of Robert Sr., of his easygoing attitude, his love of fishing, and his favorite lavender cologne. Throughout the conversation, she treaded around saying those faded words. But to her surprise, Bobby was straight to the point, demanding her to quit her verbosity and cut to the truth. It seemed that he had an idea of what happened and just wanted confirmation. After she shared it, he wasn't outraged or furious or even remotely sad. In fact, he appeared to be unfazed, replying with a simple, "Okay." As quick as the confirmation of his dad's death came into the light, he was back in the dark. At least it appeared so. Life moved along, even when Mrs. Cunningham was no more and became Mrs. DeMars. Mr. DeMars was never strongly connected to Bobby, since his only reason for making himself a part of the family was only for the missus. But after the wedding, he took an interest in the boy. Frankly, one that wasn't mutual, let alone one that wasn't kind or remotely fatherly. Bobby shut himself off from the rest of his family and friends for a time, but he couldn't wait to go to college, just to leave and be by himself. Bobby graduated from Virginia Tech with a bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering. Josiah followed along with him in his academic pursuits, joining him in nearly every course his friend took. Abby took after them as well, pursuing accounting and, well, Bobby. She'd been pining over him ever since middle school, when she started to understand what her own feelings were. He was blind to it, and it seemed that Abby was the one who had to propose to him. But he accepted it gracefully, and the two married in less than a year afterwards. Much to their delight, the three of them quickly found jobs, all in Norfolk, Virginia. Bobby and Josiah landed themselves as engineers for a shipping company, working at the docks. It appeared that Bobby's life was aimed towards a successful trajectory, despite the turmoils along the way. Bobby and Josiah parted ways after an October night of work, the two of them down opposite ends of the street. His sight was impaired by heavy mist, sweeping through the city like rolling waves of the sea. As he continued down the sidewalk, there was a slight sound behind him, a faint scraping of metal. Bobby refused to stop, but poked his head around his shoulder, only to see nothing but the fog. Every step he took, ear-piercing scratches across concrete followed. He finally stopped and turned towards the direction of the sound, his eyes scouting for its source. No shape, no shadow in the brumous streets of Norfolk. That was only for a moment. Until one appeared. It was low, close to the ground, shuffling like a lame dog. But it was dragging itself with its arms, along its stomach, a human silhouette. As it entered into the sphere of clarity that surrounded Bobby, his eyes seared in pain on immediate contact, and a painful thrum pulsed in his forehead. Down, beneath the height of his knees, was a mockery of a human. Colorless, decaying skin stretched across a misshapen skeleton. From its flesh protruded fishing hooks, covering each inch of its body. From the stomach down, legs and a waist were missing, only strands of barbed wire snaking out. It wore a faded green jacket, those donned by mid-20th century soldiers. Its head snapped up towards Bobby, a finger-sized hole piercing straight through its skull, with a stream of blood trailing from it. The thing's voice wheezed, followed by viscous coughs. Despite the array of problems with its sound, a clearly gentle tone rang through.
Bobby, my boy, is that you? Come here, Bobby. Give your daddy a hug.
Cunningham Jr. took a step back, and another, and another, and before he knew it, he was full-on sprinting down the sidewalk. That thing, that puppet, whatever it was, cried out to him, no longer with gentility, but with raspy anguish.
Bobby! This is not how you treat your father. This is not how you treat anyone. Do you understand me?
Bobby whipped his head back, only to see that it refused to crawl anymore. On the two limbs it bore, it galloped. The bush of tangled metal that was its entrails, leaving a tarish smear in its wake, and the metal jingles escalating to violent clatter. Bobby's lungs started to burn, and his body with it. As his sprinting began to slow, his pursuer gained ground. In his heart, he frantically began to pray, asking if he'd be let into heaven with the final moments Bobby believed he had. With just a single leap, the prancing thing was gripping Bobby's legs, hooks digging into his clothes and skin. As it shimmied up, the hooks dragged along, and all of them ripped through flesh like cruel hornet stings. Its embrace was strong, enough to lock him in, but with an ounce of consideration and care. Bobby struggled to escape it, but the thing protested.
Boy, don't you ever give anyone you love a hug. Don't you love me?
Bobby kicked and flailed around, trying to stomp through and maybe break free, but the barbed wire, now around his ankles, dismantled his balance. Bobby tumbled onto the sidewalk, with the horror still inching its way up his body. As it reached his torso, his throat hacked and hacked until it spewed a pool of thick red sludge. A wafting scent of brine and sand clung to his shirt, and in the muck swirled hooks and metal shrapnel. The creature's chest thrummed, almost purred, as it held tight to Bobby, its eyes clamped shut. Bobby hoped that it was just a dream, but the thing latched to him kept exuding a presence unfamiliar to a nightmare or hallucination. The pain of hooks searing into his skin and muscles compounded by the haunted cooing of a Boschian torture mimicking affection was more than the results of stress or burnout. He hoped, begged to God, that somebody could hear his screams. Anybody to pry him away from the embrace of the hook-bound cadaver. Bobby awoke along the side of the street, exactly where he was tackled by the thing. He scrambled to his feet, lifting his shirt and examining his own skin, only to find that it lacked wounds. He thought his senses were deceiving him. Even if he was free from its clutches, its briny scent still clung to him. The fear in Abby's eye was quelled after he finally returned, but it instead moved on to settle in Bobby. No possible treatment was available, let alone affordable for the couple. Abby bid him farewell, and Bobby stayed by her bedside. For the first time in his life, he cried continually for days in a row, and soon the plug had to be pulled. Bobby couldn't remain to stay in Norfolk for much longer, with string after string of pain searing into him. Bobby headed back to Laneford, and apparently so did Josiah, since he up and disappeared around the same time. Bobby took shelter under his parents' roof, waiting until they passed to take the helm of the household. He hunkered down, rarely leaving the house and only venturing out to acquire necessities. His once boisterous, lively stature soon decayed into a facsimile of himself, a wretched, bitter old man in the degrading house on East Andrew Street. The children of the neighborhood would skulk on the property, only to be chased away by a thunderous blast of gunfire. In May of 2010, Bobby's neighbors noticed that he hadn't left his house in months. Some presumed he finally keeled over and died, and that presumption was right. After numerous calls to the police, the house was finally opened, but Bobby was nowhere to be found. They swept high and low, seeking for items required to vanish, but his car, his keys, and all of his clothes were still there. And then, the police found something in the basement. A loose wall revealed the scent of lavender, attempting to mask a rot. The rot of a sallow skeleton, donned in a soldier's attire and slumped against the wall. A single lamp loomed over the scene, illuminating Bobby's cold husk, cradled in the corpse's arms. Hi, this is Connor. This is the lead creator of Hold County, Virginia, the lead narrator and the writer and whatnot. It's a solo project here. I'd like to thank you so much for listening to the first episode, the first official episode of Hold County, Virginia. If you'd like to keep track with the series, then please subscribe to the channel. If you like this episode, please leave a like as well and comment down below pretty much your thoughts on the series, if there's anything we can improve on it, your general ideas, speculation, whatever you want. Just comment down below, whatever you want. Really glad that this project is somewhat taking off a little bit. So, and also, please share this with other people. I'd really like to start getting a community that's following along with everything else. It really would help out the series a lot. And we thank you so much for listening. And we hope that you have an amazing rest of your day. Bye.